So you're listening to Radio Against Apartheid. We have a special show here. We have Medea Benjamin on the line here, and we're gonna introduce you to her. She is the founder, the co-founder of Code Pink Women for Peace and the International Human Rights Organization Global Exchange. She has been an advocate for social justice for more than 30 years. In 2005, she was one of 1,000 women from 140 countries nominated to receive the Nobel Peace Prize on behalf of the millions of women who do the essential work for peace and justice worldwide. In 2010, she received the Martin Luther King Jr. Peace Prize from the Fellowship of Reconciliation. In addition to coordinating direct action activism, she is the author, editor of 8 books. Her articles appear regularly in such outlets as the Huffington Post, Common Dreams, Alternet, and Op-Ed News. You recently went to Bahrain. Can you tell us about, you know, what went on in Bahrain and why you were there?
Well, it's a country that's very small but very critical in terms of its location in the Gulf and right next to Saudi Arabia, and a place where there has been an uprising going on since last year. It started on February 14th of last year, but we hear very little about it in the U.S. media. We have some friends who were reporters in Bahrain, did a fabulous movie called Shouting in the Dark that your listeners can find just by Googling it. It was put out by Al Jazeera, but it's on YouTube. Mm. In fact, it just won a George Polk Journalism Award this week.
Oh, wow.
And after seeing that, we were really horrified at how much repression was going on there and how little it was getting out, especially here in the United States, where the U.S. government has been silent in terms of its criticisms of the Bahraini government. And so we were approached by the leaders in the human rights community to say that on the anniversary, 1 year marking the uprising, they were going to have other protests, even though there have been protests going on all year long, but they wanted international observers to come, both to try to be somewhat of a protection for local people, but also to help get the word out to the larger public. And so we quickly put together a delegation of 11 people, and we knew that it was going to be hard to even get into the country because the human rights organizations like Human Rights Watch and Amnesty and Human Rights First, they had been denied visas to go in for the anniversary. Mm. And so on your application, you're supposed to write what you're going in for, and we knew that we would have to say we were going in as tourists. Now, in some ways, that's true as well, because we believe that when we visit countries as tourists, we don't want to just see their museums, but we want to see the conditions for the people. So we went in as tourists, and some people were stopped at the airport. They were told, we don't believe you're here as tourists. We think you're here to do something else. We're not going to let you in. Other people got in but were quickly picked up and deported, and some of us were able to hold out for a longer time, like myself. In my case, I spent 5 days and each day going out to either protests that people were trying to organize, but there was so much police repression there, they could barely even get close to the place that they were supposed to meet, or going out to what they call the villages to see the protests going on in those communities. And everywhere I went, I found incredible government repression, horrible stories of mostly about the younger members of the community, the boys who were in their teens until their early 20s, who were just grabbed by the repressive police forces, beaten, stabbed, terribly abused. We met with doctors and nurses who had been in jail for months at a time and tortured. We found the level of tear gas that was being used was just unconscionable, that they were even using tear gas as a weapon to directly shoot the canisters at people, including us. We were tear gassed every day that we were there. and came very close to being hit in the head with these canisters, which are deadly. In fact, there are 13 deaths that have been attributed to the tear gas. We think it's much more than that. And so those are the kind of conditions that we saw. And then finally on the last Friday, I was there, and the women had asked for me and the only other international who is left, a woman from Ireland, if we would come out and join them in a women's march, a totally peaceful march. As soon as we got two blocks, we were confronted by a phalanx of police who started firing tear gas and stun grenades and pepper spraying women right in the face, and I got nabbed, and that's when I was deported. God.
So they arrest you? Did they knock you down or anything? You're lucky to actually be talking to us right now.
Well, they just grabbed me and threw me in the police car, as well as this other Irish woman, and we were told that we were participating in an illegal demonstration, and then we were interrogated for quite a while. We were asked to sign something that was in Arabic that we couldn't read, and we both refused to sign it. And then finally, we did get somebody from the U.S. Embassy to come, and I must say they were quite helpful and made sure that we were not mistreated and that we were allowed to have them bring our bags to us at the airport so that we could have everything from our passports and our computers to our luggage with us to go home. There were other people in our delegation who were not treated so well. They were beaten and handcuffed and had to make a flight all the way from Bahrain to London with their hands tied behind their back.
Unbelievable.
So this will give you a little indication of how the Bahraini government and police force treat their own people. And one thing that I found that I was pretty shocked by is that the majority of the police force and the army are not even people from Bahrain. They are imported by the government from all over the Middle East and the Arab world to come in and be loyal to the king and not to the people of Bahrain. There are many people in the police force who don't even speak Arabic. They're coming from Pakistan and Bangladesh and the Philippines and Malaysia. So imagine a police force that doesn't even speak your language and has no loyalty to you as the local people, but again, to an unelected, undemocratic king.
We're talking to Medea Benjamin of Code Pink Women for Peace here on Radio Against Apartheid, 88.1 WPEB.
Yeah, also, our listeners might be familiar with Police Chief Timoney from the 2000 Republican National Convention here in Philadelphia, but can you tell us his role there in Bahrain?
Well, yes, this police chief who has a history of police abuse in the United States was hired to be the reformer in Bahrain. And he, as soon as he started in his role, which I'm sure is a very high paid one, we haven't been able to find out how much money he's making, but immediately came out with statements saying that he thought the police were reforming and that they had a moderate use of tear gas, that he hadn't seen any proof that anybody had died from the use of that tear gas. And so I wrote a piece encouraging him to take a tour of Bahrain, not with the government minders, but being led by the mothers of Bahrain who have seen their children killed and gassed. With a very noxious kind of tear gas. The tear gas used to have markings on it that would say where it was made, and a lot of it came from the CSI factory in Jamestown, Pennsylvania. Another large provider of tear gas is coming from Brazil. But the tear gas that is mostly being used right now has no markings on it at all. And we have talked to doctors and environmentalists who say that it has just gotten worse and worse, the kind of tear gas that's being used, how it is creating problems, especially for the young and the old, people who suffer from asthma. It's causing respiratory problems, skin rashes, and they are very fearful that it will, as time goes by, result in high rates of cancer and deformities among children. So we are very concerned that Police Chief Timoney is the one that is supposedly reforming the Bahraini police force.
Yeah. And these repressions are directly supported by the West, right? But they're directly supported by the U.S. and Britain. Isn't that right?
Until this year, the U.S. has been selling weapons to Bahrain, including things like the tear gas,
yes,
and tanks and helicopters. This year, because of the pressure coming from some of the human rights groups in the United States and, of course, the Bahraini groups, the Congress put a suspension on the sale, a $53 million sale that it was pending. So it is suspended right now, which is a good thing. Of course, we would like to see it canceled rather than suspended. And we also heard recently that the administration has used a very tricky way to get around it by selling under $1 million worth of goods, military goods, to Bahrain that doesn't need congressional approval. So we are putting out a call to the State Department, to the administration, and to Congress to cancel all military sales to Bahrain, to call for the release of political prisoners in Bahrain, and to put pressure on the government to really make significant reforms. The other thing that Bahrain is known for is that it is sponsoring Formula One, the races, and that will be towards the end of April. So we are putting pressure, or want to do a campaign that puts pressure on some of the sponsors of the races to cancel their sponsorship.
It's great that it's great that Code Pink and you and Code Pink do such tremendous work connecting the dots, right, for people within the United States and abroad of how of where the money's coming from and what corporations, who's profiting from all the repression and injustice going on in the world. Like you mentioned about Palestine. Why care about Palestine? Well, one of the reasons to care, besides the people,
but obviously
the obvious, is that $7 million a day goes, of our tax dollars go to it, right? So
yeah,
it's fantastic.
And I just wanted to say, Medea, I mean, you can tell that your heart's really in this work, and you've been doing social justice work for almost 30 years now. And so just ending on this note, what really inspires you to keep going and to keep doing this work?
Well, when I take a trip to a place like Bahrain, even though I am tear gassed and deported, I come back with a lot of energy because I see people who are just so courageous. Like when we were with these women, I was really fearful because I had seen the days before just how brutal and dangerous these forces can be. And the women were gathering, and we had a moment to talk before we started to attempt on the march. And I told them what an honor it was to be with them. And one of them took my hand and said, you know, you will probably be deported today for doing this with us, and we want to thank you, but we also want you to know that you have some place to go where you'll be safe once you're deported. We don't. Mm. And, you know, it makes you realize the privilege that we have, that even when we do stick our necks out and join people in their courageous struggle, they are the ones who day in and day out are facing the repercussions, whether it's the people in Gaza or in the West Bank or in Bahrain. You know, we are really so lucky to be able to be part of their struggles and yet come back to a place that is still relatively safe for us. Mm-hmm. And that gives us an added responsibility. But I was going to mention that on the march, when we saw the police line in front of us, I said to the woman next to me, the Irish woman, let's just sit down and see if that kind of cools the atmosphere. And we sat down, and then most of the women sat down right around us. And then a couple of Bahraini women we saw got up, and they just started walking straight up to the police. And we said, uh-oh, I guess we better get up and do that as well. And we got closer, and then we sort of stopped, and the Bahraini women then went further. And you just realize that they're scared, but they are so courageous. And we found that every day in the 5 days we were there, the human rights observers who go into these villages at great risk to themselves, the people who hosted us in our homes, knowing that just having us there illegally was an added risk for them. So when you see people who are so dedicated to their struggle, are so selfless, are doing this work despite the personal risk that can be everything from being jailed. And we met people who had family members who had been given life sentences, and of course other family members who had been killed. That tends to give us courage and inspiration.
Well, we're honored to be able to talk to you today. Thanks so much for our listeners, and Matt and I, thank you so much for taking the time and talking
with
us.
Thank you, Medea.